Welcome to Writing About Dragons and Shit, a podcast where two authors and a writer get together and talk about the ways they tell stories. I'm one of your hosts, Trevor Bettis, writer of Idle Champions of the Forgotten Realms and podcaster, and with me each week are two amazing people who are...
I'm Erin M. Evans. I write fantasy novels. I'm best known for Empire of Exiles and the Brimstone Angels saga.
Hello!
Be Dave Walters. thought I'd grace you with a musical number there. I'm just here to tell you that Muppets Mayhem is incredible. It came out this week. I've watched one episode and I laughed so hard at it.
Oh, and I forgot about that.
It's so good. Yeah, that's it. That's the thing I do. I serenade you and I give you keen pop culture references.
Absolutely. Good recommendations.
And occasionally I write a thing or two. Submit my project with Marvel. I can talk about that. So, you know, knock that off the bucket list.
Can you say what it's going to be?
I wrote an adventure for the Cataclysm of Kang that is coming out. So they're putting out the new game, and then they're putting out a group of adventures that for the system goes from it's ranks. It's rank one through rank six. Yeah. So it's like basically a level one to level 20 adventure. And I wrote a big old chunk of it, and very proud. Now I just got to do an official Star Wars thing, and my Infinity Gauntlet of achievements will be complete.
I'm so stupid excited for that game. I literally had that book pre-ordered before you even told me you were working on it.
it's actually pretty good. It's not to detour too much into the plug section of our show
our
here. Although y'all
so
know,
mad.
I mean, yeah, y'all know I'm a pitch man. The thing I like most about it, and this was before I was on the payroll, they made a system where it makes sense that Daredevil and the Hulk can be in the same place and need each other. You know,
awesome.
Like, I mean, obviously it's better when it's, you know, the Hulk and Thor and all the world people, but I mean, like, it makes sense that there's a spectrum of powers and abilities.
A spectrum of powers. Mm-hmm. Love it.
Yep.
Want to play it. Well, hi everybody. We were off for a couple of weeks for numerous reasons. I think my voice still might sound different, but who knows?
Puberty hits everybody different, honey.
Oh, you. God, I really set you up for that one. since we missed a couple weeks, we wanted to come back with another listener episode. And so how y'all feel about just diving into some questions?
Let's do it.
My body is ready.
Listen to that range. Episode. Listen to that range. We're doing a musical.
This first one is from Samantha. Samantha says, "Dear what is this one? Tangeritos. Oh, Tangeritos. There we go.
All right.
Okay, I like that one. I need help figuring out character voice / personality. I've heard of using the I don't know. Is this Enneagram? Is that what that one is?
Yes, Enneagram. Enneagram.
Yeah, I don't know what that one is. To help shape your characters, which is helpful.
It's basically astrological signs. Basically, I know people that know both are getting really mad at me right now, but I'm like, it's a simplification, you new age nerds.
They got really mad at me for just going,
don't quote the deep magic to me, okay? You know, but it's essentially that. It's numbers instead of signs, but it's essentially that.
So Enneagram to help shape your character, which is helpful. However, I'm stuck when it comes to dialogue. I get hung up on how they converse. What tips do you have on getting yourself out of your own head and into your characters? Also, thanks for the podcast. You guys got me started writing my first novel, Samantha.
Hey, yay. Samantha, for the record, I'm a strong 8 Enneagram. Samantha, strong 8.
I'm curious. This is complicated to look up, isn't it?
I'm going to text
my sister after this and be like, you tell me what.
I'll send you a link to it. It's one of those things you take a little personality assessment. It's closer to Myers-Briggs than astrology, because you're born what you are. Theoretically, you're born what you are as an Enneagram too, but it just helps you figure it out. Y'all, when you read the description of what an 8 is, you'll be like, yeah, that's me. Like, a lot.
You didn't need to take a test.
I'm like, is 8 the highest number? That being said, I think if you know those things well, it can be helpful to do things like your character's astrological signs. Like, if you know a lot about astrology and being like, I'm writing a Cancer and that means something to you, that's great.
Yeah.
For me, especially when I'm literally trying to find voices for voice work and stuff, I'm like, who do they sound like? Mm-hmm. I would pick a real world approximation for your character. If you're like, they're like Deadpool, or they're like Storm, or they're like if Storm and Deadpool had a baby, or they're like, like Tom Hanks on cocaine, you know, like if you can pick, I'm dead serious. If you can pick a real person, add an adjective to that person, then you know that is a gateway into it. That being said, a lot of times their voice will reveal itself as you start writing them, and they will surprise you with who they are, and you'll know you've really done it when your characters can truly surprise you. Mm-hmm. When they say something that you didn't, you're like, oh, I didn't know they'd say that, but it came out of you. That's when you've really tapped into the juice.
The juice.
Mm-hmm. I highly recommend eavesdropping on people.
Yes.
Just listen to the way people talk. Because the way people talk is beautiful. I genuinely love listening to how people talk, like all kinds of accents and slang and dialects, and I just love it. So many different things. But so that's one thing, it's just eavesdrop. Listen to people. Another thing you can do is sort of, there's a lot that you convey with word choice and syntax. So if you want to do some exercises and sort of like write a couple lines of dialogue and then change it by sort of changing the syntax or changing like the word choice and see how it shifts, right? I think too, like figuring out what kind of person this is, like, are they very direct? Are they very avoidant? I had a conversation with my husband recently where he said something and I started like responding to like a thing he hadn't said, but that I felt was sort of implied. And he was like, what are you doing? And I'm like, okay, wait, but have you met my mom? Because my mother never, ever says what she means. Like, yeah. She always says something that sort of like implies what she wants you to say. Mm-hmm. Like, she just grown up in a culture where you don't ask for what you want, you try to get other people to like guess. And the benefit of that is that I have thought for my whole entire life about what people are actually saying. Oh. And what they actually mean. And I think that it adds a lot to dialogue, is to figure out, you know, what are you saying? What are you not saying? What do you not know you're not saying? And what do you not know that you are saying? Are all kind of, they all kind of fit together. And so knowing your character as a person can help you make those choices about words and syntax and things like that. But insofar as like kind of adding to your repertoire, using voices that people already have created for characters, and like V. Dave said, and adding a twist to them, or eavesdropping like crazy and using other people's.
I will say two things just as an aside. Aaron, I know where you're from. I'm not going to bust out where you're from. But knowing that your mom is a person from the time that she would have been in the place that you're from, super
she's
stands.
She's actually not. Where's she from? She's from Utah.
Oh, it scans more.
Oh, yeah. Even more. And if you dig back, like, her family is all very Scandinavian, where it's like you don't stick your head up. You don't. It all kind of fits very, very tidily and then is exacerbated as we go.
Got it. No tall poppy syndrome. The second thing, and this is just an aside, on Instagram, there's an account called the NOLA Bible, where a dude is reciting the Bible like somebody from New Orleans. And it is priceless. If you know anybody from New Orleans, if you listen to any Southern rap, it is hilarious. I laugh myself into tears every time. What I will say is, obviously, I agree with everything Aaron says, because everything Aaron says and does is correct. But there is, I'd say, two things. One of the main signs of bad writing, and you will know it's bad writing without being able to put your finger on bad writing, is everybody says literally what they mean. The opposite, you know what I mean? I'm so upset that you did that, you know? Why did you leave us behind? You know, like that, if it's like that over and over again, where it's like, let me just vomit literally what I think. Mm-hmm. Humans don't talk like that. They don't. Yeah. You can get there. You can get something out of someone. You know what I mean? But I mean, for the most part, that's not how you actually interact. So that is something to keep an eye on. And like Aaron says, somebody who says, you know, it's a great day versus it's a lovely day versus it's a sunny day versus like, oh great, it's sunny, have all told you something completely different about that character. So yeah, be mindful of that as well.
I did want to drop in real quick on the thing of eavesdropping. I do endorse it because I 100% do it when I'm just walking around.
I will
warn you, it will occasionally leave you with stories you will never get the ending to. And my favorite one recently, I was walking through Target and it was very busy. And I was just kind of walking through by myself and you just hearing everybody. And all of a sudden, this woman's voice stands out of the crowd and I hear her say, and then she said, you can't talk to a kid like that. And I said, you didn't hear what the fucking kid said to me. And it took everything in my body not to run to her and go, what did he say?
Yeah. There's another Instagram that I saw recently that was exactly that. She's like, she heard someone complaining on the subway, and she's like, sis, I am here for all your tea. I don't know anybody involved. I'm going to agree with you. You'll never see me again. Tell me the whole story. I will only interrupt to be like, what? She did? No.
Yep. I have to wind back to that. It's a great day. It's a lovely day, because I went, you know what my mother would say? She'd go, do you really want to wear jeans today? That's the layers.
Oh,
that's, but that's a character. There is right, that exactly. character. Though. Yeah.
What I would say is like, if you're really having trouble getting into the mindset of someone else, like do the extreme, what B-Day was talking about. It's like, my character's like Deadpool. Write your character like they're Deadpool. Like, you know how Deadpool sounds, just write them as that and see if it starts changing a little bit and you're finding things that they won't say. When it comes to me for characters, like I essentially look at it like how I would, like, I know what my friends, like my close group of friends, I know what they would probably do in a situation. I'm like, no, Alex wouldn't say that. No, St. James would do that. And like, that's kind of how I approach it with the characters, is knowing from like what I need them to do in the plot, what type of character they are and what they would and wouldn't do. And just from that, I can start getting dialogue of like what they would say, what they wouldn't say. Those are my two biggest ones. Like, even right now when we're doing champions for Isle Champions, one of the things that I'm asking people in these meetings is, what would your character say and what would they absolutely not say? And just to get an idea of how they talk.
Just for the record, it's the comedian underscore Frank White is the NOLA Bible.
So I went and found it and followed him, just for the record. Because after this, I am 100% going to listen to that.
If you know anybody from New Orleans, it is. He's like, okay, so boom, Moses, what's up, little homie? You heard me? I'm like, take them slides off, little brother. This Holy Land, yeah.
I have to give just because we're talking about the NOLA accent, there's a book that was also that came out from Orbit the same year that Empire of Exiles came out, called The Battle of Perilous Graves by Alex Jennings. And he is from New Orleans, and it is set in New Orleans, and it is really good. And I have to say the audiobook is stellar.
Oh,
but it is. Yeah, it's a really cool book. There's sort of like New Orleans, and then there's also like this alternate New Orleans that's full of like ghosts and weird mythological stuff.
See, I need something to spend my Audible credits on. Audible literally pushed me a notification today. It's like, you have 7 credits. What is wrong like, with you?
I really
I've
like
wasted
it.
So much money on Audible.
So much money.
They do really cool stuff to sort of like, there's at least one kind of spooky ghost who gets a real spooky voice. There's like a little girl who's kind of like Pippi Longstocking, like orphan that's super duper strong. But it's really, really good. And what was I gonna say? Oh, the one thing I would say is, it is a book that's sort of like, you don't really, it's really confusing in the beginning because it doesn't tell you a whole lot about the world. You have to kind of just listen and like get along with it. But it's really cool, and it is very much a love letter to New Orleans. So far as I can tell, I've only been to New Orleans the one time, but I liked the fact that I had read this book first, so I kind of understood the stuff. And also, Alex Jennings is a really nice guy.
Yeah. I think it's I guess I have two different perspectives on it, because as I've shared with you all in the past, when I write, I see the scene in my head and I describe what I'm seeing. It's like a movie plays in my head. What I do know is from creating character voices in a TTRPG or a performance setting, 100% of the time I think something's going to happen and then my mouth opens and not that happens.
Yeah.
100% of the time. And I'm like, oh, they're not who I thought they were. We're over here now. This is where we live now. Yeah.
Interesting. Because you brought that up and I'm like, I feel like that might be like the, you talk about how you see it in your head, right? And I feel like I might hear the voices in my head. Like, I know, this question is a little bit like, I have ideas about how you would do that. But for me, it just happens. I just know what they sound like. And if I don't know what they sound like, that's part of why I like that Colonel sings. Like, I need to write them talking a little bit so I know who they are and what they sound like. Because if they don't have a voice yet, there's a problem. But I don't know why that happens. It just comes out. Which might be just, 42 years of eavesdropping on people. Just don't start up.
That's, So, but I would say when you're starting, especially, don't stress about it too much. As you get in, you'll find them. Yeah. They'll reveal themselves to you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Samantha, I hope that helps you out. And if it doesn't, you can write back into writingaboutdragsandshit@gmail.com and ask us more about it.
You heard me?
Hold on. This one comes from Jeremy. Jeremy, I'm gonna cut your email down here. I will send the first part of it to everyone so they can read it later, but I'm gonna skip to you your questions. He did mention that if I ever wanted to start a an ADHD podcast, to let him know.
I mean, in a manner of speaking, haven't we?
All right, so the questions. When it comes to beta readers, one, when is the time to start looking for one? I'm 11 chapters deep at the moment, and am I too late to the game, or should I send the finished draft when it's time? And two, should beta readers be writers? I ask because as an artist, having a non-artist give me critique on my work makes no sense. I can understand that there's that they're looking at it with fresh eyes, but if they can't draw, don't tell me how to draw. So if you can't write, don't tell me how to write, or how my handwriting is, I said handwriting was wrong because my handwriting is terrible, or how my writing is wrong. That being said, I just don't know. It's a different skill set. It's a different creative outlet. So beta readers.
I'm going to say two things because I'm literally having this discussion with someone as we speak. Literally. Somebody was like, somebody was like, will you read my thing? And I'm like, yes, because in LA, the scale of difficulty is a level one difficulty, or something that is, you can get somebody to help you move. Harder than that is a ride to LAX. Harder than that is to read your script. Like,
that's so interesting.
That's not the first time I've heard that either.
Drive you to the airport three times than help you move. Not gonna lie.
They're just 100%. Not gonna, there's just some things that aren't gonna happen. So I offered. Yeah, but my first question I asked them, I was like, exactly what kind of feedback are you looking for?
Yeah.
Are you just looking for my vibe, liked it, didn't like it? Are you looking for, what I would do, some mechanical stuff? Are you asking me to tear it apart? Because I can get nitpicky if you want me to, even if it's not my nature, because I find some people are very, very precious and easily offended if they don't get anything other than this is so wonderful and glowing feedback.
Yeah.
That being said, I personally would wait till it's done, because I think for a lot of reasons, you might have in your head a vision of what's going to happen that will answer their questions. You also might have a false vision in your head of what's going to happen that will answer their questions, once it's all the way done. And the last thing I will say before I stop monologuing temporarily is I think there is value in letting non-readers read it, or non-writers read it, because non-writers are going to buy it. Especially if they may not have the vocabulary to tell you why it doesn't work, but if they're telling you it doesn't work, especially if multiple people tell you, because one person can say something and it's just not to their taste. As we've said many times on this show, go read the one star review on Goodreads of like literary classics of like people shitting on Shakespeare, you know? So some things are just not going to be to a person's taste. But if you hear the same note two or three times or something there. And when I was a bodyguard, I know almost nothing about music, but people would routinely play their songs for me because I would just be like, there's something missing there. You know, like I was like, I cannot explain to you, but that part right there, when it's like boom, boom, tch, you know, it should be like boom, boom, pap or something. And more often than not, people be like, oh yeah, because they actually couldn't see it or hear it in this case. So as long as it's somebody who is operating in good faith and not going to try and go all artiste on you and like, you know, put on their beret and ascot before they tell you how terrible you are, I think there is value in it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Like getting people to read it who aren't writers can be great, especially if that's what you have access to. But the big thing is don't grab people who think that they are going to be writers. Like you want people who go, when I read this, I get bored here. Not people who are like, there's a juxtaposition of themes, I think. Like this is the thing. If you want technical feedback, you need somebody who understands the technical stuff. If you want reader feedback, you need a reader, but it is really frustrating, I'm going to say, when people who are readers, and it's not to say that readers can't understand more technical things about books. It's just that, like, sometimes you ask for that sort of how did this read hit you kind of feedback, and then you get back, here's how I would write this. And you're like, that's not what I'm looking for, right?
Yep.
If they do give you technical stuff, great, but technical stuff and the analysis of from a reader's viewpoint, they if they're not writers, telling you what they would do is not useful. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. I think insofar as like when do you get a beta reader, I agree, when you're done, you can sort of test the waters now, like see if, you know, some people are interested, but until it's done, asking someone if they're willing to beta read for you, this is my experience. People ask me to read their stuff sometimes and it won't be, I'll be like, sure. And then they're like, oh, it's like, I have a friend sent me his book that he was going to send me back in like September. And I said, I can get to this in October. And then he said, actually, I'm going to make some changes to it. So then he sent it to me like a month ago, I think. And I'm like, great. And then I'm like, oh shit, I have to finish this book. So I have not read it yet. Sorry, Jack, if you're listening to this, I will, but my schedule changed. Right. Mm-hmm, and so there is a little bit of like, you can check in with people and say like, are you willing to read this for me when it's done? If you are, but if you try to get them like locked down, you might be setting yourself up for problems.
Yeah.
Because you don't necessarily know how long this is going to take.
Yep.
The other piece being that, you know, if you tell them early, you know, when you are getting beta readers, sometimes it's helpful to become crit partners, especially if it's someone who's a writer too. And that means you're going to do the same thing for them. And so if you set up that relationship, they might send you their stuff first, and that gives you a better sense of what their strengths and weaknesses are. It can also be, if you set that up, you can trade pieces, right? I am currently trading chunks with someone, with Shona, who was on the show before, because she's working on a couple of novellas, and I'm working on a novel that is actually three interlaced novellas, basically. And so being able to get someone to look at the chunk, so that I know it's not going off the rails is really, really handy, right? So if you have that relationship kind of established with someone else that you can trade back and forth, that's really great. In that case, you are going to have to trade back and forth. You can't just be like, do my thing. Thank you. I don't have time for you. That's a problem.
Y'all already know I'm always down to look at the chunk. I will say something that happened recently is I let these beautiful people here read a screenplay that I had started on that I only had about a third of it, but I expressly was asking, do you give a damn about these people? You know, like here in the first 10 pages, is it like do you even care?
I appreciated you so much when you were just like, here is a direct question. And I was like, I can give this feedback.
Tell them what you want. I forgot that part because B. Dave's 100% right. Go in saying what you want, right? Yep. And I will say, like, you know, sometimes what you want is a cheerleader. Sometimes you're like, please read this and tell me, like, it's worth going, keeping on going. And if it really isn't, you can say, no, stop right here. But it's not, I feel like it's pretty rare that there's a thing where it's like, no, don't do it. And that may be the people I interact with, but it's, you know, there's probably something there that will keep going. And sometimes you just need to hear it, right? But you have to tell them that's what you want.
You know, I feel like somebody could be stinking it up so bad and I'd still be like, finish it. You know what I mean? At least if it's out of it, out and on the page. You know what I mean? Like, you can maybe polish that turn. Like,
this is Hamlet done in entirely fart sounds that I am rendering phonetically. But the vibe comes across. And at that point, I would like you to call mental health services for me.
You know what? The fucking Cormac McCarthy would get an award if he did that.
But that's the thing. It's like, you know, like, I don't know. I always put that caveat in there when I ask someone to read something and just cheerlead for me. Like, I need a boost. I need to know. Because, I mean, this is the thing, too. Novels are long.
Yeah.
It is not weird to get to the middle and just be like, oh, shit. You get in the middle of the ocean between the two islands and you're like, oh, I should never have left land. And sometimes you need someone to read it and go, of course you should have. This is great, right? Mm-hmm. I always say, you could tell me if it's bad, right? You could tell me, like, if I should stop, but mostly what I'm looking for here is why I should keep going. And then otherwise, yeah, it's like, you know, at this point I would like big picture stuff. You know, at this point I would like, you know, just to polish, like, I'm not doing any big changes. I just need to know if there's any place that's confusing, like be clear about what you want.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Trevor?
Not because I have, like, I haven't really gotten to this point with my novel stuff. Like, Aaron,
I read your book.
Yeah. Aaron was awesome and read my book. And, but again, she was really helpful because she was like, okay, what do you want out of this critique? And I said, tear this shit apart, rip it to the foundation, like, just destroy it. And
sorry, I want to be clear. Like, let's flip this around. Let's say someone comes to you and says, I'm going to be a beta reader. You, listener, I'm like, could you beta read this for me? And they say, I would like you to tear this apart, right? For me, when someone says that, it means like, let's go after all the things that are in the way here. But it doesn't mean let's make fun of it.
Oh,
and it doesn't mean let's nitpick every comma. Mm-mm. Because if you're going to say things like, you need to up the stakes for this, it does not fucking matter if you don't have a period.
Yeah.
If you have a run-on sentence on page 17.
Yeah.
Because that stuff is going to move around. But I think that's a big part, is like, be respectful of the person that you're critiquing.
Yeah. And I would say, to the best of your ability, include something actionable. Like, I just don't like it is not helpful.
That's not helpful.
You know, like, specifically, it's like, I think the main character's a douchebag.
Yeah.
And I hope he gets stabbed in the face.
Yeah.
Is helpful. You know what I mean?
Like, I think I've told this on the show before. I wrote a chapter of a character once. I had my wife read it. And I was going for like an unlikable character. She's just like, yeah, but like, I wouldn't keep reading. And so like, you made him unlikable, but I would not, I'd put this book down.
Task failed successfully.
Yeah, no, task failed successfully situation. But I was like, okay, no, that tells me everything I need to know going into redoing this chapter and this character and removing him as a point of view that I later did. But yeah, I think at the end of it, for your questions here, Jeremy, for number one, no, you're not too late. Wait till you're finished. And number two, do both if you can. Get non-writers, but if you get non-writers, ask them, are you ever planning to be a writer?
And be specific in your feedback, which I think you just said, but I'm being more specific in our being specific.
No, that was good. Jeremy also had a thing in here that was a little topic that I'm gonna hold on to, because we're either gonna talk about at the end of the episode or we'll save it for another episode.
Okay.
So let's go down to Kevin. Let's see. Kevin says, hello, Titans of the Timely Tangent.
Yep. I went full Randy Orton on that one, Kevin. Thank you.
So I've been following your podcast for a while, and I really enjoy it and appreciate the insights. I'm finally starting the idea of building my first novel. I have an idea for a story and a strong magic system, parentheses, and for B-Dave, it does not involve 10,000 years of history. The basic idea for a character...
Like, so help me, Kevin. I was like, so help me, Kevin.
Actually, sorry, Kevin, I'm gonna break in the middle of this for a quick email tangent. We had one person write in a response to a previous question, and they enjoyed the fact because you thought that I had said they were a pantser, and they and you got upset. They were like, it was totally fine. I'm not a pantser, but I understand because I get just as angry.
I apologize for my outburst, person.
Yeah. And then while I'm thinking of this, I'm sorry for misgendering you, Karen. I usually try to stick to they or them for people who I don't know, and I failed on that, so I apologize. But anywho, back to Kevin.
Doubly apologize.
I have a basic idea for a character, but I'm trying to flesh it out into a full character and having a hard time figuring out where to start. How do you start building a character? Personally, I've researched and found there is such a broad spectrum of options. Brandon Sanderson says answer four questions, and those questions are who are they, what are they, what do they need, and why can't they have either? Or no, what do they want, what do they need, and why can't they have either? And others say fill out these super detailed worksheets that have the details that will never make it into the book. What is your take? And then thanks for continuing to do this podcast. It really helps me. And honestly, I listen to it every morning, even when I walk my dog, which is exercise I need since since his recent diabetes diagnosis. Well, sorry about that, but good you're getting the exercise. Absolutely. So thanks for being the reward during our walks. So characters.
Okay, so this is another thing that I am like, I don't know, you just do it, which is not fair. Because I actually
think this is what it's like dirty. Talking to me.
Yes. Yes.
So okay. So what do I do? So one thing I'm gonna say right off, I hate those character questionnaires. If they work for you, that's great. But I find frequently that when I've tried to do them, there are just chunks where I'm like, I don't know. This is never going to come up. Like, and there are things in there where if you ask me, like, just total sidebar, so much total tangent. Someone asked me, and I was asked me, it was a while back, and I found it when I was like looking for something else in my Discord. But they asked me if I thought Mahen golfed. And I was like, my heart says yes. My heart says yes, Mahen golfs, but he does not talk while he's golfing. Golf is a meditative sport.
I thought the exact same thing.
Right? Which also led to Havilar's like boyfriend Bryn probably grew up network golfing. And so it's like, okay, here's something I can do with my father-in-law, but he's like, if you fucking talk, if you fucking mess my shot up, I will bury you. And that the girls have learned to golf and they're terrible at it. Farida has no ability to do anything but just like whack the ball really hard, and Havilar gets bored and goes off and explores the rough. Now let me tell you, if I had created these characters with a questionnaire that asked what's their golfing take, I would be like, what the fuck? I have no idea. This thing is not helpful.
It would have been great if you did though, because when you got that Discord question, you'd be like, well, as a matter of fact.
But this is the thing, is like there's a point where you like work with a character enough that's deep in your heart, you know the answer. Even if the answer is absolutely bad shit. I have never once thought about my head in golf before. That would be weird. But I am like, no, okay, yeah, no, I know the answer to this.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the thing. I feel like to start with that you know, usually I will have an idea for a character, like a concept, which is the one in Empire of Exiles that I could say is like a huge spoiler. So I'm just going to click that to the side. And then, you know, there's like, but there's like, okay, Farida and Havilar, right? I want to have sisters. I want to have sisters that are in the process of sort of differentiating themselves. And I want, you know, there to be the one that is trying to sort of be the responsible one and does a really irresponsible thing fundamentally. And so you have these traits that appear, and I find that they appear frequently when you add other characters into the mix, because the characters are going to interact with each other. They cannot be side by side, siloed, not doing stuff that touches each other. They're going to all be in the same space. So, okay, you know, who are they next to each other? How do they affect each other? And so then that's one of the things I kind of like those kernel scenes for, is like you get them together and you're like, okay, now you're in the same space, and what happens? Who defers to who, mm-hmm. right? Who gets to decide what they're doing? Or is there a conflict about that? You know, who does someone come up and talk to? Like, who gives off the authoritative vibe? This is a big question, right? Do you have, like, what do they want is a good question. Like when you come into the book, what is it that they want? That is related to the sort of overall plot, but then also, like, what is the thing they want that is going to steer all their choices sort of mm-hmm. invisibly? Do they want stability? Do they want power? Do they want, you know, to make amends? Like, all of these things might not be, I want to take the ring to Mount Doom, but there's going to be kind of nudging it along.
Yeah.
Those are the things that popped in my head. And then I ran out of steam, so speed day strike.
I mean, again, yes to all that. I think you, because again, my babies tend to emerge full grown and fully armored. I think the only thing I know, I do think back to what's their life been up until now, at least roughly, mm-hmm. and I have an idea of when and how they're gonna die, at least roughly. That it's like, you know, that guy's going to die in battle in 10 years. You know, like, some of them aren't going to make it out of this story. You know, yeah. Like, no, I'm quite clear.
And I want to dig in on that real quick, because when you do say that, like, is that as much as you're putting into it? It's just like, I know this dude's going to die. He's going to die in battle 10 years from now. Not like what the battle is, who were the sides were or anything. Like, how deep do you go?
That actually goes exactly to my next point. So thank you, Trevor.
Oh.
You got to ask yourself, is this a load-bearing character or not?
Yeah.
I shy away from saying main character and not main character, because, again, you know, Uncle Ben was in half of one comic book, and he's been, you know, carrying a lot of water for 65 years, yeah. You know? So, you know, the how important is this character? Because that directly impacts, you know, how much detail it is. For Ruthie and Chuck, my characters from Electropunk, I know how when and how the two of them are going to die specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Like, specifically. Yeah. Even if it's, I mean, I don't know, again, to not spoil my own work, it's like, I know Darth Vader's going to die betraying the Emperor to save Luke Skywalker.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily know, you know, is it two books? Is it four books? I mean, it's me being me. I know it's fucking four books, but you know what I mean. In general, you know, it's like, I may not know how many yards are between here and there, but he will meet his end and get his redemption saving his son.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'll know that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that for other characters that are not necessarily load-bearing characters, like I have two characters, Revenant and Foresight. Revenant, it's funny that you say that. She's also a ghost of a little girl, but she's basically the Incredible Hulk. She's just a rage spirit. She just looks like a child, and she's the strongest being in the universe.
Nice.
Just like a great child. And Foresight is blind. She can't see anything at all, but she can see the future, and that's why she can still fight and do things, because she knows where everybody is, because she knows where they're going to be. I can't tell you offhand what their ultimate ends are. I know what they do for this story.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily know where, like, it goes all the way for them. I think for me, the reason why it's worth knowing the future, at least in broad strokes, is you can effectively foreshadow it.
Yeah.
You know, you can start hinting at the fact that it's like, you're gonna, you know, one day I know how this is gonna end for you.
Yeah.
I would say also, continuing to yes and everything Aaron says, because everything Aaron says and does is correct. Once again, I wish you guys could see this. Aaron's glowing tonight. Like, I've been like, how nice her skin looks here on the call. But I think what they want is most important, because everybody in every scene has to want something, even if it's just a cup of water. That's not Kurt Vonnegut. Is that Vonnegut? I think
the thing, I can't remember who it is yet.
I think it's Vonnegut.
But, yeah.
But I would say, do they know they want it is important. You know what I mean? Like they might be looking for the magic sword, but what they actually want is love and significance. And, you know, do they know they want love and significance? Because that is going to manifest differently.
Frequently, no.
Yeah. I think it's one of Vonnegut's rules of storytelling, that everybody must want something.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
It's very weird that it's like you say that, I'm like, yes. And then I'm like, where does that come from?
Yeah.
Like Vonnegut. Feels like Vonnegut.
Kurt Vonnegut. Yeah. Good.
Hey.
Good job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had, we got there. I had an interesting conversation with someone who was talking about having trouble coming up with plots. That she felt like she had worlds and she had characters, but the plot was sort of eluding her. And one of the things that I pointed out is like, and this sort of goes back to the character, that you could do this backwards, basically. That if I have a character first, one of the things that I find that I'm thinking of, although not necessarily explicitly, is like, what are they uniquely capable of doing? Like, what can they do? What kind of obstacle can they overcome? And then what are they really not willing to do? Like, what are they really bad at or like dreading? And can that be the same thing? Because if it could be the same thing, you got a really good like combo there. So the example I gave was an Empire of Exiles character, Amadea. Amadea is extremely competent. You're okay. And she's very like,
were you
competent.
Saying Amadea?
I think I said Amadea. Yeah, I think I was doing Amadea. Yeah.
I don't care. There's still people who say Faraday and tell me I say it wrong, which I think is adorable.
The fact that they tell you you're saying it wrong.
The person I'm thinking of is just teasing me, I know. Yeah. But yeah, they're like really adamant, like, no, it's definitely Faraday. Anyway, like, she's really good in a crisis. Like, she's really good at getting everybody like calm down and like taking charge and sorting things out. She's really good at research, and both these things are really important. She's also like absolutely 100% not interested in talking about her past whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So when we have a mystery that makes both of these things happen, like, she's uniquely capable of helping, but also like really doesn't want to because she has this thing she doesn't want to deal with. Mm-hmm. And I think that adds up to like a really compelling combo. So if you've got a plot and you've got a character, like, think about like, what could they do in this plot that would be like, you are the right person for this job. Why this person? But also, they're not going to do it. It's not going to go easy. So what is the thing that's going to make this not go easy for them because of who they are and what they don't want to do, what they really mm-hmm. don't want to do?
Mm-hmm. And I always come back to theme. What's the story about? Not what happens. What's the story about? Because that will help inform everything else.
I'm going to do the thing that B-Dave does. I'm going to echo everything y'all said. Like, for me, when it comes to like making the characters, it's generally, what does the plot need? Like the thing that I'm working on right now, this was one of the few times that I started off with a character already. It's like, I know who this character is. I want to use it for, I want to see what it would be like having her own story. And so then I just started working off of things. I'm like, okay, well, what would I want her to go up against? Oh, this. Okay, well, that's going to require this type of character. So I'm going to plug that one in and just throw, I'm just going to say the Emperor, and just start going off as that. And then every time I hit something that needs a person to have that happen, there's a character, and I'm just kind of naming them quickly or just giving them a title and throwing them off to the side for this character thing that I'm going to build.
I mean, and now I'm yes ending you, Trievor.
Oh. Yeah.
I mean, it is the exact same process as the beats, where you're like, here is a sequence of events. Well, what must come before and after? It's like, if for this to play out, what character must be there? For Electropunk, that's how the Colonel was created. We had this idea, Nikola Tesla. Okay, his niece and nephew are fighting crime. Great. How do they learn how to fight? Nikola Tesla can't fight. So somebody taught them. Okay, the Colonel. Why does the Colonel take on, you know, raising these kids? Because he almost died and Tesla saved his life. How did Tesla save his life? Yeah. He took a grenade in the face and now he's partially cybernetic. Owes Tesla his life. Yep. Dope. That was literally how the Colonel came into being, just like that.
Yeah, you know? when I'm getting further into the plot, like this one, it's like, okay, this section they're going to be traveling with the caravan. I want there to be a character from the caravan that's talking with them. Okay, I have this character, but why are they employed to plot? Oh, I'm going to tie them into this rebellion that they're going to run into later, and then that's going to be a tie back to them. And so like that, I just build that out as I'm going through it. Of like, I want something here. Does it work? Yes. Can I tie it to the plot? Yes. Okay. Cool. We'll keep it.
And I think pending the kind of story that you're telling, especially if you're telling a sprawling thing, you can have some people that may not be super significant now, but are going to be super significant later. Like in the D&D movie, there's a certain cameo. If you haven't seen it yet, you should watch it. But you're like, that seems like quite a bit to have that guy show up in that role. And you're like, because that guy's going to come back again, you know, if we ever get a sequel. So, you know, you can meet the interesting gunslinger in the tavern and not see them again because it's like, you know, they'll come back somewhere down the road. And I think I also shared with you all when I was doing A Darkened Wish, the comic book, they were pushing me to condense characters.
Yeah.
And for every one of them, I was like, I can't because that dude has to do this and this person has to do this. You know what I mean? And it can't. No other one can pull double duty, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's, but again, they were all load bearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like that load bearing, not load bearing distinction. Mm-hmm. That's, I like that very much.
Yeah. I mean, bounce off of what BD was saying with like the knowing different characters, like where they will end up. Like Aaron, the book that you read, the main character of it, I literally know how the scene goes that he dies. Like, this wouldn't have happened.
So interesting to me because I don't think I could say this about any character I've written.
Okay, wait, no.
Except the ones that do die.
Finish your thought, Trevor, and then I got it.
Well, and then like there are characters in that story that is trunked now, but like I knew how they were gonna go out, and then there are other characters I was like, they might not, they might. Eh.
All right, let me ask you this: how did Fareed and Havilar die?
Fuck if I know, man.
I just asked. If you know if they fucking golf, you can tell me how they die.
I don't know. This does not ping something in me. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like. Probably if Farida's going out, it's going to be some like Firefly Wash bullshit where it's like maybe she's just too heroic in the moment. And that's an answer.
No, I don't like it though.
I mean, like that's also the thing is like, I guess this is part of it. It's like, I'm not going to rate that book.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
yeah, I get that.
Meh. But
trick question, Fareed and Havilar are never going to die.
They never die. They live forever.
Right.
They live
and
forever.
And if they die, we'll go to the Shadowfell and get them back again.
Well,
they
died. Sorry, that's a spoiler.
I do think that, though, that is a thing with it. Like, I knew how that character was going to die because I had planned out that I was going to get that far in the story.
That's true. Mm. That's fair. I have thought of ways for them to die because there were points where I thought that's how the story had to end.
Yeah.
Although now I don't remember. I know that when Brimstone Angels was a standalone, when it was Hell for Loveless Hearts, I had a plan where Fareed died.
Yeah.
But I cannot remember how or why.
I vaguely remember you telling me about this. It had something, I think it had something to do with like Asmodeus and stuff, but
I don't know that Asmodeus actually had any kind of, because she had it was
old lady Havilar, right? Or not Havilar, Fareed.
She wasn't old, she was like in her 20s. She was like,
oh,
but like Fareed is like 17, so she was like, you know, 27. And she had Lorkin wasn't in it. Lorkin wasn't in it. She had a like a barb, like a bearded devil named Barbus or something, who's like just kind of devilly, and they because that was when Bob Salvatore had Barabbas the Gray, and they're like, you have to change that name, and around then they're like, actually you have to change the whole thing, but we're giving you a series like that. Okay, fine. But so yeah, it wasn't Lorkin, and the character that eventually became Dahl was in it. Something she dies in the end. But it's there was all I remember about how there was one where I thought Havilar was gonna have to die, like she and Bryn were gonna sacrifice themselves, and all I remember is some kind of pillar of fire, but I don't remember why.
Hmm.
It's funny that you say Fareed would go being too heroic in the moment. I very much think Havilar would go that Hodor moment where it's just like, no, I mean, I will
just want Havilar to die and guys run. Like having a nice life.
You see, that's the thing is that if I really have to just listen, my gut is like, meh. But if I really poke it, like, I feel like that's how Havilar goes out and she's pissed about it. Like,
it's like full seven samurai, like, we lived again, what is this bullshit, you know?
They're old ladies surrounded by her seven grandchildren. She's like, I just wanted to die fighting an ice giant. Was that so much to ask?
trying to bribe them to wheel her out to find an ice giant, yeah. You know, like, yeah.
Okay, I kind of love the idea that, like, Havilar is like grandchildren just like haul her out, just pop up and, okay, you're gonna do it, this is how you're going out.
She walks out with a walker, but it's made of like, four.
I'm not doing this, I'm not participating in this, this is unfair.
With a walker in her banner and her helmet.
No, the walker's made out of four glaives, like she's just walking around with this tower.
It's a battle walker.
Walker.
One last action serve, though. It's like, gah, 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 gah. Yeah. It's like Yoda versus Dooku. It's like, the hell is she doing? Yeah.
I feel like if you took action surge as like an 80-year-old person, like, it would just mean that you aren't stunned on your next turn.
Yeah. I will say this, and then I know we got to start wrapping it up, or at least do the next question. One of the best examples of that kind of foreshadowing, I bring it up again, is Demon Slayer, the Mugen Train arc, with Rengoku, the Hashira, which are basically Jedi for people that don't watch Demon Slayer, although you should. It's brilliant. Like, the narrative very much just screams, oh, that dude's fucking dead. And then, like, you get a little further into it, and you're like, no, he's not gonna die, he's gonna make it, this is actually incredible. And then, I mean, to the very last second, they ping pong that willy wonny, willy wonny, willy wonny, willy wonny, and I won't tell you what happens, and no spoilers in the comments if you know, but it is very incredible the way they set it up to go all the way from like whatever to like at the end. Yeah,
I don't know. This is how tired I am. You were talking about that, and I equated it to Moulin Rouge telling you that she was going to die at the beginning, and then you get to the end, and you're like, oh, they're going to be happy. Oh, shit, that's right.
She should marry the Maharaja.
Damn it. I don't know why anyone can do that, and it will probably kill me. Good stuff. All right, well, Kevin, I hope somewhere in there that answered your question and helped you out. But again, if it didn't, you can write into writingaboutdragonsandshit@gmail.com and ask us another question. We'll do our best to not tangent all the way through it. I do think I'm gonna hold on to Jeremy's topic suggestion. It was about genre, so we'll maybe tackle that in another episode, because as B-Dave said, we are gonna start wrapping things up. And to do so, friends, where can people find you? What awesome things are you working on?
You can find me on Twitter at Erin M. Evans, or Instagram, since we're talking about that, as all the Erinies. You can join me, actually. So you can join me on Mondays for Concentration Check, a co-writing space. This week, although, we're going to do it on Tuesday, but by the time this comes out, it won't matter. So if you were there, it was nice to see you. twitch.tv/DungeonsCrawlers, 1:30 p.m. Pacific. Come do some writing sprints with me. And you can pick up my book, Empire of Exiles, wherever fine books are sold, and pre-order the sequel, Relics of Ruin. Comes out next April now. It keeps moving. I'm glad means I don't have to like write like crazy, but I feel bad when I tell people, oh, it's gonna come to March. And then it's like April. Like, stay still, please.
Everything happens time. When and how it's supposed to, you know? B-Dave Walters, to say words about things. You can find me all over the interwebs, wherever fine streaming content can be located. Stuff's happening. I don't know, you know? I'll talk about it on the Tweetagrams at the time.
That's fair.
I just also, You guys suffer so much by the fact that this is not a video. Besides the fact that two of them are objectively beautiful, it's like Aaron has gone through a full Disney princess transformation. Trevor, I don't know if you've noticed. I mean, it's like her hair's gone up, down, over the side.
I'm very fidgety with my hair. Sorry.
It is like, it's so incredible. It is. I mean, just like, it's, I don't know how she's doing it. Yeah. It just,
I alternate between being annoyed that my hair is in my face and then annoyed that my hair is bumping the thing I'm sitting behind, which it's not doing here. And then after a while, I'm like, it's pulling on my scalp. I can't take it anymore. So it's just up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down.
Yeah.
So I'm glad it's working for you, though.
No, it's a feature, not a bug. Yeah. So there you go. Follow Aaron on Twitter and the Instagrams. If only to get to see that.
Instagram is like post pictures of me with my hair up and down.
That's it. Or just turn a camera on you for about a minute and a half, and just things will just happen.
Faces, organically. Hair changes.
I'm telling you, tune in to Concentration Check, folks, because not only the Sailor Moon Disney hair transformation, but her thinking faces are choice. Her absolute
amazing writing faces, if you haven't actually watched that. Because I'll be like,
oh, I love it.
Great. It's good TV.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, you can find me on Twitter at the Trevor. There's an AI in there.
That's what we're doing.
You can also catch the final episode of Adventurer's Guide to the Multiverse at some point, because two of us got sick and then one of us is out of town, and so we're figuring out. Apologies, it'll be there eventually. We'll find out what happens to the multiverse. I'm sure it's fine. That's gonna do it for this week's episode. Thank you all so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to support is by leaving a review on your podcast service of choice and telling your friends about the show. If you have any questions, like our awesome listeners who wrote in today did, you can send those questions into writingaboutdragonsshit@gmail.com, and we will answer them at a time that we can. but if you'd like to keep up to date on the show, you can follow us on Twitter @aboutdragons. But until next week, go write about some dragons shit.
She should marry the Maharaja.
God damn it.